This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump acknowledges that Democrats could take control of the U.S. House of Representatives. But U.S. Senator Chris Coons, or I should say Chris Van Hollen, on ABC's This Week, says he and other Democrats are hopeful about taking control of the Senate as well.
We have lots of races within the margin of error, so I'm not going to make any predictions. What I can say is that, as you discussed earlier on this program, Senate Democrats really face the toughest political map in 60 years. So it's remarkable that we're in as strong a position as we are.
And on that same program, Republican National Committee Chair Ronna McDaniel said Republicans and president know how close the elections are.
The president recognizes the historical trends with the House and the Senate. Usually the party that holds the White House loses 3 seats in the Senate and 30 seats in the House, and he's doing everything he can to turn out every vote.
Close races in usually non-competitive regions are dominating the midterm election ballots. Americans go to the polls on Tuesday. Bahrain's appeals court handed down life sentences Sunday to 3 senior opposition members, Sheikh Ali Salman and 2 other men, all members of a now outlawed movement, have been acquitted by the criminal court on charges of spying for Qatar. Salman, the leader of the outlawed group, is currently imprisoned on a separate charge. The 2 other men were tried in absentia. Human rights group Amnesty International called the life sentences a travesty of justice. Bahrain, Saudi Arabia, and the United Arab Emirates have all severed ties with Qatar, alleging it has ties with Iran and radical Islamist groups. The Pacific Islands of New Caledonia have voted to remain part of France in an independence referendum. Voters answered the question, do you want New Caledonia to gain full sovereignty and become independent? Nearly 57% of the island's 174,000 voters decided to remain part of France. This is VOA News. Presidential hopefuls in Madagascar elections have held their final campaigning ahead of the November 7th balloting. There will be 36 candidates on that ballot. Discontent over an economy that has not fully recovered is a key issue. Hundreds of people rallied in Pakistan's port city of Karachi, protesting the Supreme Court's decision to acquit a Christian woman sentenced to death on blasphemy charges. Asia Bibi was arrested in 2009 and sentenced to death in 2010 for insulting the Prophet Muhammad. Bibi said a heated argument occurred with some Muslim women. She offered them some water. The International Organization for Migration says the Central American migration caravan going through Mexico toward the United States is an annual event and poses no threat to anyone. Lisa Schlein reports from IOM headquarters in Geneva.
U.S. President Donald Trump calls the migrant caravan moving toward the United States' southern border an invasion, a view the International Organization for Migration does not share. IOM spokesman Joel Millman tells VOA the caravan is not an emergency.
The next point I would make is that they're nowhere near the border yet, so it's a little bit difficult to respond to hypotheticals, you know, is it an invasion? And they're hundreds of miles away. I've never heard generally anyone thinking this is a threat to civil peace in these annual events.
Among the thousands of migrants from Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador are asylum seekers fleeing persecution and violence. Under international law, countries are obliged to grant them access to their territory and give them international protection. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Iran's supreme leader is declaring victory over the U.S. after nearly 40 years of confrontation, AP's Ben Thomas.
The U.S. is the defeated side and the Islamic Republic is the victorious party. That's Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's assessment of the confrontations between Iran and the U.S. since the 1979 Islamic Revolution. He says the U.S. no longer dominates Iran the way it did under the pro-Western monarchy that ruled prior to 1979. The comments come a day after the Trump administration announced it would reinstate sanctions effective Monday, and on the eve of the anniversary of the 1979 takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. Ben Thomas, Washington.
And NATO says one U.S. soldier was killed, another wounded in an attack in Kabul, Afghanistan. That attack is the latest of so-called green-on-blue attacks in which Afghan forces turn their weapons on international soldiers with whom they are working. The attacker was killed by Afghan forces. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
We produce evidence before the court which would have warranted that same court to cancel the elections that were frauded in their hands and then now retain what was authentic.
Cameroonian President-elect Paul Biya to be sworn into office Tuesday.
This is not the choice of the people, so to speak, and we are not expecting any march, especially from this new crop of politicians.
King Nswati III names new cabinet ministers days after appointing Ambrose Dlamini as Prime Minister of Eswatini.
Families of the victims wailed and sobbed as the coffins of their loved ones were carried through the streets of Minya.
Hundreds of mourners remember the dead passengers attacked by terrorists. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Cameroonian President-elect Paul Biya is scheduled to be sworn into office on Tuesday. The inauguration usually takes place before a joint sitting of the legislature in the capital, Yaoundé. Biya's installation will be his seventh term in office. He was declared winner of the October 22 poll with 71% of the vote. My main opponent, Maurice Kamto, rejected the results, citing voter irregularities and alleged rigging. He has since called for a resistance movement against what he described as a flawed electoral process. For more, I read barrister Christopher Ndong, who represented opposition leader Kamto in his legal challenge against the outcome of the presidential election.
The installation and even the proclamation of the results was, in fact, in total violation of certain disposition of the law, because the Constitutional Council acted in arrogance, did not do its job very well. When contestations are made in relation to an election, the duty of the Constitutional Council is to confront the results of the various parties. We challenge them to produce 36 of those polling reports. 32, sorry. They brought it. We gave ours and asked them. They started by removing six. Of the six they brought before the Constitutional Council, they discovered that the reports were not signed. They were fake reports. So it now caused them not to bring the others, and we knew there's something wrong. We gathered and compiled and discovered that Maurice Kamto won by 39%, while Paul Biya was following with 38%. Those were the results, irrespective of the alarming fraud.
The challenge was squashed at the Constitutional Court, which effectively ruled that President Paul Biya was legitimately elected with at least 71% of the total vote counts with the presidential election. So what you are saying is neither here nor there, and it's just sour grapes. What's your response to that?
We are saying that the results are fake because it is a manipulation. They had to hire some statisticians and some computer experts to come and prefabricate results. And we are saying for an election results to tie, they must be tying with the reports that come from the polling station. The Constitutional Council, we agree, is the only body to announce elections, but must make sure it verifies the authenticity of the results that were given to them. And that is why when the elections have passed, when parties find out that they have been cheated, they will file a petition to the Constitutional Council, meaning they have seen some irregularities. All of that we did, and I am saying we produce evidence before the court which would have warranted that same court to cancel the elections that were frauded in their hands and then now retain what was authentic. But the court did not do that.
This is the case where November 6th, President Paul Biya will be sworn in for his seventh consecutive time as president of Cameroon. There are speculations that Kamto has been ordered to be arrested. What is your recourse? What is your next step to salvage what you are talking about, challenging
what
this?
What Cameroonian knows about this result, Cameroonians of the opposition, all put together in the majority know of this result, is that the result does not legitimize Paul Biya. It does not reflect the polls on that day. And so Paul Biya being sworn in, you know, they have the state machinery. They have the police, the gendarme, everything. That's why they keep going ahead. And because the Constitutional Council acts at first and last instance, we don't have another form of going to another court. And that's why they take this arrogance to do what they are doing. But what we are saying is the Cameroon people know that it is Kamto that won the presidential election. All the other opposition political parties know. They have the documents in their hands. So we are saying they will go ahead to do it. You cannot steal from somebody and you tend to lob that person. This is the second time of a repeat of the same action. They did it in 1992 against Frondi. Now they are doing it again on Kamto. And if you have to look at it, in fact, you, the journalist, should help people to have this explanation clear. Paul Biya is 36 years in power. It's not because he's winning elections. It's because he has the power, the government machinery, the military, and that suppresses. He has resorted to repression.
What is next now? Because people who continue to protest against the election...
The next step of which we have in our agenda is to go protesting against those results pronounced by the Constitutional Council. And that is why we have a national program which the Cameroon National Movement has put up. After Professor Maurice Kamto declared that he has won the election, even before the Constitutional Council declared that he has won the election, he is the person who won that election. And so if Paul Biya and his people, elect Paul Biya and the administration, arrogate the arrogance to go ahead to pronounce the election, we shall make public life difficult for them because we shall go protesting until we come to our victory. That is the position of the party. We don't have an army. We don't have arms. We don't know how to fight. We will always protest because protestation is a fundamental right. It's a, you have the international instrument talk of political, economic, and social rights. We have to have a political right to protest until the world will listen to us and then come send a commission because that is the only course we have now.
Barrister Christopher Ndong represented opposition leader Kamto to challenge the Cameroonian election outcome. He spoke with me from the Guinean capital, Accra. Meanwhile, armed groups in the Cameroonian restive English-speaking regions have been attacking and chopping off fingers of workers of the country's second largest employer, the Cameroon Development Corporation, or CDC, in what has been described as renewed efforts to destabilize the country ahead of the inauguration of President Biya, who has been in power for 36 years. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzaka reports from the English-speaking southwestern town of Tiko.
Four men and two women were rushed to the government hospital Saturday in the English-speaking southwestern town of Tiko. Nurse on duty Stephanie Ako says she is waiting for directives on what should be done.
What we have to do now is to clean their wounds and stop blood from oozing out while waiting for doctors and laboratory technicians. They are the ones to decide whether the fingers will be amputated or not, but their lives are not in danger, even though some of them have completely fractured phalanges, metacarpal and carpal bones.
The six are workers of a rubber plantation near Tiko, owned by the Cameroon Development Corporation. 27-year-old Christopher Ongene says armed men attacked them Saturday evening.
The people arrived when we were packing our bags and farm stores to leave. One of them shouted, "How many times have we asked you not to walk here again?" Then one of them ordered us to put our hands on tree trunks and they started cutting. Some of our colleagues who wanted to escape were shot.
Ongene said they were accused of defying instructions from the separatists not to go to work on the farms to protest President Biya's re-election and his expected inauguration on November 6. The CDC runs banana, palm oil, and rubber plantations in Cameroon's troubled southwest and northwest regions. In August, the agro industry said that more than 6,000 of its 20,000 workers had fled sporadic attacks, killings and kidnappings from armed separatists seeking an independent English-speaking state. Governor Bernard Okalia-Bilai of the Southwest region says the armed groups aim to create social tension.
Cette situation est sérieusement combattu par les forces de sécurité.
He says the military has been deployed to stop the terrorists from attacking workers as part of their strategy to create tension and destroy the region's two main agro-industries, the Cameroon Development Corporation and the Palm Oil Plantations Company. He says besides inflicting wounds and suffering, some workers have been killed, others kidnapped and held hostage, and some plantations have been completely destroyed. Separatist groups had vowed on social media to make the English-speaking regions of Cameroon ungovernable. They consider the state-run CDC a legitimate target. Conflicts began in the English-speaking regions of Cameroon in 2016 when teachers and lawyers complained of discrimination from the French-speaking majority in education and the justice system. The government responded with a crackdown, and separatists fought back. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Tiku, Southwestern Cameroon.
King Nswati has named 18 cabinet ministers days after appointing Ambrose Dlamini as the new prime minister of the Kingdom of Eswatini. Among the newly released list of cabinet ministers is Princess Ekanyiso, daughter of the king. The new cabinet, which consists of 6 women and 12 men, also includes a number of the king's siblings. Critics say this is yet another strong indication of nepotism, an accusation the administration in Mbabane denies. For more reaction regarding the new cabinet ministers, I reach Mfandlana Shongwe, Deputy General Secretary of the banned political opposition group PUDEMU in the country's commercial capital, Manzini.
Besides being displeased, most people here are not surprised because some of these things that happened here were expected, especially the choosing of people coming from one church here, because religion in this country has become a political vehicle to riches and which puts you to the corridors of power. If you happen to go to some of these churches, especially those that have pastors outside the usually religious missionaries, the evangelical churches, so to say, this has become a latest trend in our politics, where church politics and money is the business of the day.
The king's daughter will be the ICT minister or in charge of ICT. Some people are calling it nepotism. What is your reaction to that?
It is nepotism, but it is more than that, especially when you see the king's children getting into positions. The people are complaining already because most of these children are in business, and now that they are being brought into government is yet another issue where you will find a conflict of interest, basically. This is very, very, very worrying, but it was expected to happen because we have seen of late the king's children playing some social roles in society where it was obvious that they were being groomed to become ministers and leaders in this country.
Supporters are saying that she is qualified. So does that mean that because she is the daughter of the king, she should not be considered for that position, even though she is qualified to hold that position?
We have academic institutions. We have never seen her attending an issue where you have the king's children around government. That is where the issue is. It is not an issue of qualification or whatever. It is an issue of one family amassing everything around itself together with their friends. So it's not about qualification. Anyway, how do you qualify to become a minister in Swaziland where it is only a one-party system here? So you are in a situation where people are employing their children, their friends, It's something that has been going on. The late King Sobhuza did the same thing, and it is expected even this one is doing the same thing. Most of these children are heading the army. So it is not out of the ordinary.
What are the expectations for those new ministers in Eswatini?
One other issue that is of a great importance here and concern is the expectation. You know, this is the same system, the same one-party system. And now that the king has sort of asked to be assisted in choosing the prime minister, this is not the choice of the people, so to speak. And we are not expecting any much, especially from this new crop of politicians. You see, our new finance minister is a white man. Now, at a distance, you may be fooled that because this man is white, is going to inject more ideas, more economic. So the whole thing is going to collapse in the face of the world.
Infantlana Shongwe is the Deputy General Secretary of the Eswatini-bound political opposition group PUDEMU. He spoke with me from Manzini. Hundreds of mourners turned out Saturday to remember the dead passengers of a minibus that was attacked by terrorists outside the St. Samuel the Confessor Monastery in the southern Egyptian city of Minya a day earlier. Many survivors of the attack, mostly women and children, were transported to Cairo where they are being treated for gunshot wounds. For VOA, Edward Uranian reports from the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
Families of the victims wailed and sobbed as the coffins of their loved ones were carried through the streets of Minya towards the Prince Tadros Church, where they were eulogized and mourned. Inside the church, Coptic clerics spoke of forgiveness and hope as families grieved for the departed loved ones laid out in a row of white coffins near the front of the church. The leader of Egypt's Coptic Christian community, Pope Tewodros, told his followers that the attack was meant to sow division and that the best response was to avoid recrimination. He says that it is clear to everyone that the aim of the attack was not just to kill Christians, but to undermine the unity and cohesion of Egyptian society as a whole. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi expressed his condolences to Pope Tewodros in a phone call, and the Egyptian government agreed to pay benefits for those who were killed and wounded. Survivors of the attack were also transported to Cairo, where they're being treated in government facilities without charge. A Coptic priest, Father Bashara Fahmi, told journalists that most of the dead were men. He says that attackers pursued the minivan, shooting at its windows when they caught up with it, at which point they opened the doors and, according to survivors, shot the men in the head while shooting the women in the legs. The Islamic State terrorist group reportedly claimed responsibility for the attack, although some Egyptian analysts were skeptical of the claim, arguing that many of the terrorists infiltrating the country from neighboring Libya are supported by foreign governments. Munir Adib, a specialist in Islamic radicalism, told Al Arabiya TV that Egyptian security forces have made major strides in recent months in protecting churches and have succeeded in dismantling dozens of terrorist cells that were attacking churches, monasteries, and Christian clerics. Adib went on to stress that it is difficult to protect many monasteries, though, since they are located in desert regions like the St. Samuel Monastery, where Friday's attack took place. St. Samuel, he noted, is located on a winding desert road leading 130 kilometers through the western desert and on to Libya. Friday's attack and a similar attack on Coptic pilgrims to the same monastery in May of last year were carried out by terrorists who infiltrated the MENA region, coming from Libya, according to Egyptian security sources. Ahmed al-Mismari, who is the spokesman for Eastern Libya military commander General Khalifa Haftar, has accused both Qatar and Sudan of supporting terrorists that have infiltrated Egypt and operate in the desert. Both countries deny the charges. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Uganda says it will administer the experimental Ebola vaccine to its healthcare and frontline workers along the border with the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. Uganda's Ministry of Health says it decided to take the preventive action as the country is at high risk from tens of thousands of people crossing the DRC-Uganda border every week. For VOA, Halima Tumani has more from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
Uganda says on Monday it will begin giving the experimental Ebola vaccine to some 2,000 healthcare and frontline workers along its border with Congo. Uganda has no confirmed cases of Ebola, but as the Ebola threat has worsened in the DRC, Uganda's Ministry of Health says the preventive measure is needed because of heavy border traffic. Over 20,000 people cross every week from the DRC into Uganda and back, the ministry says. Jane Ruth Acheng is Uganda's Minister for Health.
The public high risk of cross-border transmission of Ebola to Uganda was assessed to be very high at national level, hence the need to protect our health workers with this vaccine. Currently, in Uganda, we have 2,100 doses of the vaccine available, and preparations are in high gear, including training of health workers that are to be targeted.
Many of those crossing the border are from the DRC's North Kivu province, about 100 kilometers from the Ugandan border, where armed conflict has made fighting the Ebola outbreak a challenge. The vaccine, known as RVSV, has been used during recent outbreaks in Congo, Guinea, and Sierra Leone, and is currently being dispensed in North Kivu. Uganda's health ministry says the Ebola vaccine will be given with the consent of Uganda's health workers since it is being used outside of clinical trials. Health Minister Acheng says despite being experimental, it is absolutely safe.
The vaccine is a recombinant vaccine genetically developed by getting a particle of the Ebola gene, replacing a particle of the gene with another virus called the vesicular stomatitis virus. The vaccine, therefore, is genetically modified organism that is able to replicate and cause antibody production against the Ebola virus, but not cause Ebola virus disease.
The Ebola virus causes a severe and often fatal hemorrhagic fever. The Democratic Republic of Congo has confirmed 250 cases of Ebola, causing 180 deaths and another 41 suspected cases. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
And participants at the first ever WHO Global Conference on Air Pollution have adopted a plan for reducing air pollution, which every year prematurely kills an estimated 7 million people. For VOA, Lisa Schlein has more on the outcome of the conference from Geneva.
The World Health Organization calls the conference a resounding success, noting 900 people attended, twice as many as expected. Furthermore, it says more than 70 member states, non-governmental organizations, and other participants have made voluntary commitments to take action to reduce air pollution. Director of the WHO's Department of Public Health and Environment, Maria Nera, says the WHO is taking a leading role in setting forth action to tackle air pollution for a cleaner, healthier world.
WHO, as the global health agency, made as well very strong commitments, starting by proposing an aspirational target of reducing by two-thirds the mortality caused by air pollution by the year 2030. And this is really a big challenge that we will mobilize, and we call for everyone to contribute to that.
Nera says prompt action is needed to reach that goal. For example, she says people need to stop burning solid waste and agricultural waste. She says they have to move away from fossil fuels. She says people in Africa and other areas with populations in great need must be helped to meet the goal.
We need to liberate those 3 billion people that today they are still relying on fossil fuels at the household level to cook or heat or light in their house. We need to make sure that they will have access to clean sources of energy.
The WHO plans to put in place a tracking system to monitor commitments made by the participants. The system is intended to gauge the progress being made toward achieving better health for all by freeing the world of air pollution. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America, and you're listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Mpuga and music from our African collection, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Juna, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Mpuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter. Good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. Egypt's Al Ahly take first leg in African Champions League final. Walid Suleiman scored 2 VAR penalties to give Egypt's Al Ahly 3-1 first leg win over Esperance in the African Champions League final in Alexandria. It was the first time VAR was used in a Champions League final, and referee Mehed Sharef watched replays before awarding the spot kicks. Emra El Solia scored the other goal for the hosts, while Youssef Belalai converted a penalty for Esperance. The Egyptian club are aiming to win their 9th continental title. Tunisia side Esperance have won the title twice, but they lost 1-0 at home to Ahly in the group stages of the competition. The second leg takes place at Stade Olympique in Reims on November 9th. The overall winners will also earn a place at December's Club World Cup in the United Arab Emirates. Meanwhile, Nigeria have lost their right to enter 2 clubs in each of the annual Africa Club competitions after years of poor results. The Confederation of African Football says just 1 club from Nigeria will be entered into the next Champions League and Confederation Cup. However, for the first time in 8 years, Libya will be able to enter 2 teams per competition. The increase comes despite Libya's domestic league being in turmoil because of the country's security problems and their clubs being forced to host continental club competition matches at venues outside of the country. It comes as Nigeria have fallen out of the top 12 of the CAF rankings of club competition results over the last 5 years, while Libya are up to 9th. The system is used to determine which countries get an extra side in the 2 continental club competitions. Nigerian clubs have struggled in both competitions over the last 5 years, aside from Enyimba, who reached the Confederation Cup semi-finals this year. The points that Enyimba earned could see Nigeria back with 2 teams for the 2019-2020 editions. But for the next tournaments, which are set to begin at the end of November, Mozambique will have 2 sides in each for the first time. Cameroon are once again allowed 2 clubs in each event after they had just 1 entrant in each of the 2018 editions. It now means Congo, Mali and Nigeria, who had an interrupted run since the double entry was first introduced by CAF in 2004, lose out. Only Algeria, the DR Congo, Egypt, Morocco and Tunisia have consistently kept up the right to 2 teams. For the 2018-19 competitions, the 5 are joined by Cameroon, the Ivory Coast, Libya, Mozambique, South Africa, Sudan and Zambia. The final of the 2018 Champions League between Egypt's Al Ahly and Tunisia's Esperance is set for November 9th. DR Congo's AS Vita Club take on Morocco's Raja Casablanca over 2 legs in the final of the Confederation Cup at the end of November. And one of Africa's football's most powerful figures has been banned from the sport for life for breaking bribery and corruption rules. Ex-Ghana Football Association President Kwesi Nyantachi also broke conflict of interest rules, according to FIFA. Football's World Governing Body launched an investigation after Nyantachi was pictured taking $65,000 from an undercover reporter. FIFA fined Nyantachi $500,000. Nyantachi was also vice president of the Confederation of African Football and a member of the FIFA Council. Nyantachi said he will appeal against his life ban from the sport at the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Finally, 10 Benin youth players and former Football Federation president Tangerine Mocharofu have been handed prison sentences for age cheating. A Cotonou court found them guilty of lying about their ages, which saw them failing MRI tests in Niger. September's failed tests saw Benin disqualified from last month's regional qualifying tournament in Niger for the 2019 Under-17 Africa Cup of Nations. The players were given 6 months prison sentences with 5 months suspended. Because the players have been held in prison since their return from Niamey in September, they do not face more time behind bars. Mocharofu, who was president of the Benin Football Federation until August, was also found guilty because of his administrative role that led to the failed MRI tests. He was handed a 12-month prison sentence, including 10 months suspended. He has also served some of his time after being arrested earlier. The national under-17 team coach and two other officials received similar sentences for their roles in cheating. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks, Douglas. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports.
My money, my body, now your own.
And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. And you'll be hearing from Davido, Eve, and Killing Me Softly being Kwame Eugene being featured on here.
Party billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci for your body, yo, baby. No do, gotta for me. No do, said I don't. No do, shakara, oh, eh. No do, gotta for me, oh, eh. Yeah, beauty, you do. My number one, you do. Sipping brugu, tutu. For your love, it tutu. I go chuku, biko obianuju. Say you do me juju, cause I'm feeling the juju. Shake it to you, I wanna dash it to you. You can have it to you, you know I got this in you. I love you. There's nothing above you. Be jet to you. I like your minis, get you. Okay, you carry fess you. If I tell you, hey, I love you, oh. My money, my body, now your own, oh, baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh, baby. No do, gotta for me. My number one in tutu. Sipping brugu tutu. For your love in tutu. I go chuku. Biko obianuju. Say you do me juju. Cause I'm feeling the juju. And you know say nobody only. But I don't go tell you story. I gotta be your man. I gotta be your man. Let me talk to you. Say a few things, girl, I'm feeling you, but it's up to you. Say you know I got this. I love you. There's nothing above you. Bridget, yeah. I like your mini skirt, yeah. Okay, you carry fess, yeah. If I tell you, say I love you, oh. My
My money, my body, now your own. Oh, baby. 30 billion for the account, yo. Yeah. Versace and Gucci for your body, oh, baby. No do, gotta for me. No do, said I.
Katika. Nina mi daddy kai. Simba ukata kinyonga Fukoni na mabumba Lungundi chili na sunta Yani bo 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 Kana niko shaga ro o o o Yani nasi mama de 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 Kakitingisha wo 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 Baby girl dance for me one time Mi uno feni kunata Tena jifunge na ngata Zile za kibao kata Katika, 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 katika. Yani katoto kami, kako nindindi, kamekazika nindindindi, nyuma mbwi, kako mbwi mbwi mbwi, kana misifa shangindindi. Lika vizia kitambo, leo kame nasa chambo, tapakia na mdando. Karambo Kana michezo ngoma Nisindi mbali zombe Na minapatia zapuani Muogo aja ngombe Yani Kana niko shaga ro oh, oh, oh. Pagana si mama de 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 Kakitingisha wo 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 Ola Ola tembea Yani siwezi kutembea Cheche mena cheche mea Yani hadi nalegea Katika, 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 katika. Maumivu na ugulia, mwiba ukizama na hisi mateso, utamu na ngangania. Ndizi kwa nyama napata mchecheto Na kuna nazi kwa mkongo jo Na unga mchuzi wa soto jo Unola rosti rojo rojo Mikunjo flani wa bogo jo Kibao kata tenteme teteme Kilingeni kuzama uchutame Uwezi pata we mpaka usimame Haichangui mwembamba munene Nikalaze kwa bedi kitandai Nikachezeshe samba Nakalivo na body kinanda Tungulizi meni bamba Katika, 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 katika.
And you're listening to Sona Jabate from Gambia. But before then, you heard Navy Kenzo featuring Diamond with Katika, which in Swahili means shake your booty. And then Adina featuring Kwame Eugene, Killing Me Softly. And we began with Davido. And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The International Criminal Court, ICC, was in its comfort zone last Friday when its chief prosecutor, Fatou Bensouda, delivered her latest 6-monthly report to the Council on the situation in Libya. As has been recognized by the African Union, despite its denial, the ICC continues to focus primarily on matters relating to Africa. It was also noted in the past that member states in the Security Council, particularly powerful member states who have rejected the authority of the ICC, are too happy to refer problems to the ICC for its investigation. And so it was in the case of Libya. As may be recalled, in its resolution 1970, the Security Council in 2011 referred the matter of Libya to the ICC for investigation regarding violation of the laws of war and crimes against humanity. This is the reason why the chief prosecutor was in the council. Now, when the chief prosecutor delivered a report, there was general praise for the ICC, contrary to what happened when the ICC was discussed in the General Assembly, when a number of member states criticized the organization. Madam Bensouda complained that despite the 3 warrants outstanding, including one for Saif Gaddafi, one of the sons of Muammar Gaddafi, no arrests had been made. And she felt that the failure to arrest those indicted with the cooperation of states meant there was a denial of justice. What was very surprising is that the 3 members of the Security Council, Ethiopia, Cote d'Ivoire, and Equatorial Guinea, also joined in the praise of the work of the ICC on Libya, forgetting that the African Union had called on member states not to cooperate with the ICC. This kind of behavior is what has led many member states not to take the African state seriously and has given encouragement to the ICC that it has full support in the African continent. Let us not forget that there are many ways one can bring about regime change. Outside powers had used the ICC to try to determine who should be the head of state of an African country. The case of Kenya is a good one, but luckily the effort failed. But not to forget the case of the Democratic Republic of the Congo, when here one of the major candidates in the coming election was denied the possibility of standing on the grounds that it had been indicted by the ICC. So this is the reason why Africans should be more particular and observant. For example, in the same briefing in the Security Council, the United States representative, while welcoming the ICC dealings in Libya, said to the chief prosecutor that the United States would not permit interference of the ICC in Afghanistan with respect to the U.S. troops, nor allow the ICC to deal with Israel as regards the West Bank and Gaza. This shows that Africa remains the main focus, primarily because African states are economically and politically weak to sufficiently push back. And this is a problem which has to be looked at more and more carefully. When you have Security Council members from Africa elected by the African group to represent Africa, and yet they take these positions in this council in contravention of what the African Union has said. In contrast, look at other members of the council. Three members in particular, Kazakhstan, Russia, and these Latin American representatives, they pointed out clearly that the ICC should not become the main court. It's a subsidiary organ that only intervenes when nation states are unable to pursue those violating crimes against humanity. And to underline this point, the ambassador of Libya, when he spoke, also noted that Libya had been conducting investigation and trials, and they have been prosecuting people for crimes, and therefore said that one should not overlook that. Furthermore, the three major parties fighting each other in Libya, trying to avoid third-party intervention, last Wednesday said that they would do it themselves without any outside intervention. This is what I think should be borne in mind by all African states, and not allow the international community to make it the sole object of the ICC. I thank you.
That was One Mind's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, reporter Douglas Mpuga, producer Saida Hamdun, and our engineer for today, Tiang Wang, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, when a coward sees a man he can beat, he becomes hungry for a fight. I'm your host, Peter Clotter in Washington. Good evening, Africa.